Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, the Good Beer Seal, and it's January 2018. One of my favorite parts of this job is getting to sit with some of my favorite brewers from around the world, and luckily Mr. Toshi Keiuchi from Hitachino Ness Brewery in Japan is here in New York with his friends from the United Imports, and we got to sit with him and with George and Michael from the United. We're in a hotel. This show will be airing sometime this winter in 2018. And I'll tell you, Toshi and I go way back when we first opened Jimmy's Number 43. The most popular beer that we served was Hitachino Ness White. And some people still remember that. There was the image of the owl we put on posters. It was like the welcome signal. Come into this basement bar, there's good beer. And I felt that Hitachino Ness represented Jimmy's Number 43 to me and to many customers. So, Mr. Toshi, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for invitation to the show.
Yes, and you have and George and Michael, introduce yourself, because you guys are a core crew. There's a special relationship between Hitachino Ness and Be United Imports.
Yeah, my name is Michael Obolensky. I work for Be United Importing Company, managing primarily the New York City market as well as Northern New Jersey and Alabama.
George, welcome.
Hello. How's it going, Jimmy?
Great. We've had you on before. It's nice to be finally get to be with Mr. Keiuchi.
It's excellent. Yeah, my name is George Flickinger, and I am also with Be United International, and I also work primarily in New York City, but also Minnesota and Louisiana.
Interesting. Yeah, so, you know, Hitachino Ness White Ale, that meant so much to the early craft beer scene in New York City. What was different about it is that I always had a sensibility that food and drinks from Japan were of a higher quality than what had been available in America. And there's something very Japanese about your products. So let's talk about that, what it means to be a Japanese brewer, the history of your family making sake.
Okay, so my family, Keiuchi family, have brewing Japanese sake for over almost 200 years. And 20 years before, so we started brewing beer because the Japanese tax system has changed 20 years before, and we entered new business for brewing beer. And my family, the ancient is Gihei Keiuchi. He is a founder of sake brewery. Also, he is a village leader of our Konos village, and he collected rice from the farmers around the village, and he sent the rice to Tokugawa family as a tax. But he think for using rice, making sake by using such rice, we'll get a big benefit. And he started sake brewing almost 200 years before.
So when was that, Toshiyuki?
200 years before.
200 years ago. Okay.
Around 1823.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems very special. So your family was in that region for a long time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when did you decide to make beer?
So 1993, Japanese regulation, tax regulation was changed. Before that, only major brewery like Kirin Asahi Sapporo can brew beer, but the tax regulation was changed. Our small brewery like us can enter such new business for brewing beer. Mm.
But at the time, you really didn't have the resources in Japan, did you? You had to go to get equipment from Canada and learn expertise from other places.
At that time, so some rich company can import German high technology equipment, but we are not so rich company. So we sent some letters to American supplier. At that time, America is so open for craft beer business. So we researched by internet or we researched by some books, and we found some good supplier, but their equipment is quite reasonable. And we sent directly email to the supplier, and we buy Canadian equipment. But now we are using Japanese equipment only.
Oh, wow.
In our brewery. Because the Japanese brewery.
Yeah, of course.
And the first brewery, I think, was what, a 500 liter batch size? Or
quite, no, 2,000 liter.
Oh, 2,000 liter.
Yes,
okay.
First brewery was. Mm. But yes, every year expansion. Mm. Now the beer brew house is almost 10 times bigger.
So back then, 1993, 94, 1996, what beers were you brewing?
First, we brew amber ale. Mm. And next, pale ale. And we started white ale. White ale was final. Why? So in Japan, two tax regulations. One is all malted beer. It's also other tax category, we say happoshu. Happoshu can use some other ingredient like a herb, like a orange juice. So for get the license of happoshu, we took almost 3 years. Mm. So first was beer, but next we enter new category of happoshu, and we started using such ingredient like herb and orange.
Mm-hmm. Great. And you know, it's great to see how much you've grown since then. And for you, Michael, as you know, as not just a salesperson, but you know, an aficionado of great beers, you know, you've sold beers from Italy. You're working closely with Mr. Caiucci. You know, what does this brewery mean, you know, to you?
I guess what's unique about Hitachino in the world of Japanese craft beer and in our portfolio in general is just it's so distinctly Japanese. It really has its own character to it, its own identity that doesn't seem like it'd be repeatable anywhere else outside of the country of Japan. The white ale has its own innovation to it. It's not necessarily like Japanese per se, but you can see like an innovation towards the flavor and aromas of that style. But then you take other beers that Hitachino has brewed, for instance, the Anbai or the Saison du Japon, which feature ingredients that are distinctly Japanese. Even one of the beers that they started with a long time ago, the Japanese Classic Ale, is aged briefly in cedar casks that were used previously for taru sake. So you're taking a style that is English, that was historically aged in barrels, but aging it in a barrel that is really has more Japanese identity to it, putting a spin on it that's distinctly Japanese with the Anbai, the use of seaweed salt or ume plum juice, and with the Saison du Japon incorporating koji into the mash tun, basically going about a sour mash in a completely unique way.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing what you've done and since you started, because so many of your beers are so cutting edge, the Anbai, the Saison du Japon, they're so classic to me. But back in when you first started in the 1990s, what was your market mostly in Japan?
Yes, so our market was only Japan. We are brewing copy of American beer, like IPA, like a pale ale. But we started business with Matthias in 1999. At the time, we discussed long time about how to expand our beer in American market. So our conclusion was we should brew focusing Japan culture or Japanese ingredient, also maybe using some SAK technology. So such idea was innovated by Matthias and myself. So this is why we brew only Japanese style beer now.
Yeah. Mm. And so when you first started working with Matthias, Be United, what were some of the newer beers that you made then?
Every
beer is from them.
Yeah. White ale was our idea, but the next Saison Japon Anbai, we were talking the culture of Japan and how the market is growing in States, and we make some direction using Japanese ingredient and Japanese equipment for making beer.
Great. And George, Michael, we're drinking the white ale right now?
This is the white ale, yeah. So really the flagship beer from Hitachi no Ness, so to speak. So it's a white ale style, so Belgian vit, but brewed with unmalted wheat, obviously, malted barley. Traditionally, the style also includes coriander and orange peel, and in this case, the Kyuchi Brewery also adds orange juice and nutmeg to the recipe. So it has a bit more acidity than your classic Belgian vit, brightening it up a bit, making it even more refreshing, and the aroma has this touch of nutmeg. It's not too overpowering, with obviously the citrus aromas and the coriander.
And George, you're fairly new to Be United. I mean, you've been on the show a few times.
Yeah.
Tell us about when you first tasted Hitachi no beers, you know, first learning about them.
Well, I mean, as Michael mentioned, I was really, really blown away by how the Kyuchi Brewery incorporates sort of Japanese terroir or their sake brewing tradition. And this is something that, I hadn't really seen before in Japanese beer at all. It's still to this day, it's not often that I find like a very unique Japanese beer that's not from the Kyuchi Brewery. So it's this incorporation of their sake history or Japanese terroir, oftentimes both, that really I think makes them stand out on the world stage, quite frankly, not just in Japan.
And Toshi, in your establishment, is the sake brewery and the beer brewery, are they separate buildings? Are they different operations?
When we started the beer brewing, it's the same building, but now the production of beer is expanding, so we set a new brewery in 2007, and now beer brewery is independent than sake brewery.
And what's the difference, your sake brewery, you're using rice, but what are differences about the way you operate? The science, the art?
Completely different. Sake brewing, it's coming by hand. Beer brewing, coming from equipment. So beer brewing is huge, big facility. But sake brewing, Japanese sake brewer, we call Toji, they are brewing sake by hand. It's completely different.
So it's still a small batch?
Yes, yes.
And do they actually use their hands in the process?
Yeah, so not use hand, but so beer brewing is easy than sake brewery. Once fix recipe, how to mix the malt, how to mix the hop, we can use maybe computer to calculate the recipe, and we can brew beer by using a computer control system. But sake brewing is more complex. First, wash rice by hand. The water percentage of rice is quite important before steaming. After steaming, we make koji. It takes 48 hours at the koji room. It is open, so also hot temperature, 35°C. So the lot of moisture will disappear. So the temperature was changed by disappearing the moisture. By temperature is changing, so the yeast, sake yeast, the growing ratio will be changed. So lots of complex factor is we have for brewing sake. So we need to care about step by step.
Yeah.
Toshiyuki, could you tell us a little bit about what koji is in case the listeners aren't familiar with the sake brewing process?
Okay, so sake brewing process. For sake is coming from rice, of course, you know. And first we grind polish sake outside, because outside of rice have lots of protein, lot of vitamin. It's not good for sake fermentation.
Well,
and
not,
we use only center of rice. Next step is washing and soaking rice.
Mm-hmm.
And next, steaming. 1 hour steaming. And after steaming, so we put koji room. Koji room, we splash the seed of koji. And koji is like a yeast. And expanding the yeast is on the surface of rice. And this koji, it's like a mold.
Right, it's like a mold.
It's like a mold.
Right.
Mold have enzyme.
Mm-hmm.
Changes starch to sugar. change protein to amino acid.
Uh-huh.
Mm. And next, mix koji and steamed rice and water and yeast in fermentation tank. After almost 1 month, fermentation was finished, we press and get a clear sake. It's a brewing process of sake.
So the rice sits in the brewing tank for 1 month?
Yes. Because the sake brewing is quite unique. We say parallel fermentation, koji change starch of rice to sugar, and yeast will change sugar to alcohol in the same tank. Beer, first mashing, change mm-hmm. starch to sugar right. by malt, and after the few times the wash, mash, only fermentation. Beer.
The liquid goes mm-hmm. off, yeah.
So and sake is so complex.
But in sake, you're paying a lot of attention to the yeast.
Yes, yes, yes.
Do you add a yeast or is it a natural yeast?
We have a, we call shubo. Shubo is like a fermentation mother, we say. This is a cultivating yeast by small batch. And expanding yeast and mix with mashing.
And you know, did you grow up in the business? When you were young, were you working around the sake brewery? Was your family working in the business?
Yeah, I born in sake brewery, so I'm 54 years. So my experience is 54 years.
So you wake up, you have rice and your shoes. Yeah. And you must, so you know this very well, but you also must have these memories
of
being young with the sake brewery. Any memories that you want to share with us?
Lots of memories. So interesting thing is when I was 5 or 6 years old, so at that time, tax officer will come very often to the brewery to check the tax. And one guy take me to the bus and wash my body. And he spent one night at our brewery. And yes, so lots of such memory.
Tax man.
And what about animals? Did you have cats in the brewery?
No.
Okay.
Also, the interesting story is, woman never enter sake brewery.
Woman.
Woman. Mm. Why? A lot of people say some boomer, but the sake brewer is only man.
Maybe
at a brewery, 20 people laborers working in sake brewery. If one woman coming, maybe man is started fighting. Sake brewery never woman. No. We're okay.
So when your family started in 1823,
yeah,
you know they were making sake one way. Were there any technological changes in 200 years, or is it almost the same?
Almost same, but also we buy some equipment, but step is almost similar.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, I've wanted to sit with you for a long time. You know, I've known you for many years. I think that you're one of the more interesting and important people in the craft beer scene that I've met. And the sake background is making, you know, it informs us more about you.
Yeah.
Michael and George, why don't you guys ask a question? You know, you've worked a lot with Mr. Kaiuchi. And this is we started this at 10:30 in the morning. This is a look into their lives as brewers and salesmen, because we met at 10:30, we're already drinking. They have a long day ahead of them, meetings. I know tonight in New York City they'll be at Treadwell Park with Ann Becerra doing a special tasting. But you must have some questions for him about the early days. I want to kind of get the early days. That's what radio is good for, is, you know, documenting history. Okay.
I guess my question would be, how did the Japanese market respond when you started brewing these beers that were a little more unique, the red rice, even the white ale? It's not like a classic recipe. Did the Japanese market immediately gravitate towards these beers, or?
Japanese craft beer market is 10 years delay than American market.
Mm-hmm.
Now, IPA and sour beer coming with a boom in Japanese craft beer market. But after maybe, also the share of craft beer is only 0.4%.
Oh, wow.
By volume, so stays at 8%, wow. So quite small volume.
Sure.
Mm. why? So I'm thinking, so every Japanese people thinking major beer up Japan, it's good quality beer. So this is why, so the share of craft beer is so small.
And what about other imports of American IPAs?
Lots of American craft beer is coming to Japan's craft beer market. But Japanese people like IPA, but the Japanese culture, bitter beer, they do not like bitter beer. Like Asahi Super, it's not so bitter. Everybody love not bitter beer. But now IPA is boom, it's coming by media, by TV. So Japanese people is thinking the media say this is good. Yeah, good beer.
Yeah. And what was the back, 200 years ago, your family was making sake. When were the first, modern breweries in Japan? What were the influence? Were the Japanese breweries influenced by England or Germany?
Some brewery brewing by Zen, some brewery brewing pale ale. So 20 years before Japanese craft beer culture was started, maybe lots of copy European beer, American beers coming to Japan's craft beer market.
And Toshiki, is home brewing is still illegal in Japan?
Illegal, right? Can you brew home brewing?
But I know that you guys have you let the public come in and brew, right? In your brewery.
Yeah. It's legal. Because we have a license.
Right. Mm. I mean, I think that's great because you're obviously, fostering this sort of love for beer and the process. And
so how does that work? They come and brew. Do they pay to brew? Or do they brew and then they buy the beer and take it?
So our system is everybody come to our brewery and we can make a recipe by computer. We can do demonstration of beer brewing. Everybody can start mixing malt, crushing, and mashing, and loitering, and boiling, and adding hop. This process is legal in our brewery. But fermentation, only Kyuchi Brewery can do in our brewery. So also, after fermentation finished, we bottle and ship to the customers.
Yeah.
But this, the lack of a home brewing culture, I would assume, is a big detriment to the growth of craft beer in Japan.
But it's illegal, completely illegal.
Right. But obviously, you're helping to sort of foster this passion for beer.
So we can teach the maybe fun of craft beer
by
using such a small facility.
That's
so
great.
Every liter of alcohol gets taxed, right? Even the homebrew. And then new things that you're doing, so your brewery is a community center. I know. I remember after the tsunami, 2011, you survived, but you took care of your community. What else are you doing in your area? What's your community like? As a brewer, are you a very important person?
Now we are working with some farmers near our brewery because our area was very famous area of. Growing up barley and wheat. So, but now so beer brewery is using imported barley and imported malt. So our farmer never growing barley and malt, barley and wheat. So we started to expanding to using our original barley, which harvested at our area. So now totally we are using 200 ton of barley at our area.
And are you growing hops also now?
Yeah, it's a little bit hops.
A little bit hops. And other new things, I know that you have a restaurant in San Francisco.
Yes.
And what made you interested in opening a restaurant in America?
We are thinking, so beer brewery should be based on agriculture. So we have farm growing up our barley and wheat, and also other side we have a lot of spent grain from our brewery. Every day we have a 4 or 5 ton of spent grains coming from the brewery. So we bring to the farmers and growing up beef, and we started a restaurant in San Francisco carrying our original beef and our beer.
Wow, spent grain beef.
Related to his
agriculture. That's incredible.
The full circle.
Now I'm hungry. Is it called Wagyu?
Yes, Wagyu. Hitachi Wagyu.
That's very good. And you also said you have a restaurant in Shanghai, China.
Yes, so it's challenging for us. We cannot export our beer to China market. By government is fighting each other, so we cannot export our beer. So we set a small brewery in Hong Kong and bring Hitachi no beer at Hong Kong and carrying to the China market. But it's also changing. So expanding our Hitachi no culture, we set a restaurant and we set a small brewing facility in restaurant, and we are brewing special Hitachi no beer in the in Shanghai restaurant.
Oh. Hey, Michael, what's this next beer that we have?
This next beer is the Saison du Japon. What's really cool about this beer is it incorporates the Koji mold that Toshiyuki was talking about a few minutes ago. So the mold in the sake process is this basically the enzymatic break is used for the enzymatic breakdown of the rice starch. So in this case, they use the koji in the mash tun to assist in the enzymatic breakdown. What's cool is that koji also produces some lactic acid and citric acid in during this enzymatic process. So it's basically a unique way of going about a sour mash.
And does it work with yeast as well? It assists the yeast, or is it acting instead of yeast?
It's acting alongside of the barley enzymes. Then after the mash tun, correct me if I'm wrong, the wort goes into the boiling tank and then goes through the usual boiling process that a wort would usually do. And then the yeast comes up later on. So it's not like the sake process that has this parallel fermentation where the koji is simultaneously breaking down the starch and the yeast is eating those simple sugars. Instead, the enzymatic breakdown happens, the wort is boiled, and the wort is then fermented into beer.
The use of koji here is really more for the flavors and aromas that it imparts. It's not necessary in the process of this beer.
Also, we are using sake yeast for this Saison Japon.
Right.
Sake yeast can only eat single sugar.
Okay.
That's why we use koji for mashing. We make a single sugar in the mashing process.
So the yeast is important to you then?
Yes, it's important. Mm. So sake yeast create a little acidity flavor. It's important for this beer.
Yeah.
Also, we are using a Saison yeast, little Saison yeast, both.
That's great. It's like I said, 12 years ago we were drinking Hitachi no White Ale,
mm-hmm.
and you really have come up with so many other beers since then that I love. So I'm really happy to be here. We're taking a short break on the radio, but we're going to keep this rolling because we have a new device. But it's fun to be here. We're in a hotel, Midtown. Toshi, you get to travel a lot, don't you? You're in New York today. You were in San Francisco. What are some places in New York that you like to go to that are your friends, you know?
Jimmy 43.
I like that place too. We'll invite you back one day. Cheers to that. Yeah.
Jimmy 43.
And more anecdotes. You know, George, you went to school in Scotland. We had you on once. You talked about when you first started working for Mateus. So you guys are going to meet Mateus soon. What are some of the things that, as an importer, you have to talk to, your supplier about? I mean, there must be...
Well, I think for us, it's a treat when we have someone like Toshiyuki in town or really any supplier because, of course, there's a lot to learn about their process and their products. And so it's a great time to have a beer with them and talk about beer.
So the event today, Treadwell Park with Ann Becerra, how did you guys come about setting that up? It sounds like it's been planned out for a while.
It has been, yeah. Anne had really been wanting to do an event with Toshiyuki for a long time. And so, of course, with Toshiyuki in town, the event happened, or is going to happen, which is great.
And then how will How will you guys feature Toshi at the event? You know, so it's a good sized bar. There's a lot of beers.
Yep. Well, so at Treadwell Park, they have a small little cellar space. It's actually underneath one of the sort of stairwells in the bar. And so what we're going to do is we're going to go into the cellar and we'll have some sake and some beer from Hitachi Nanef. And we will do a sort of intimate tasting for those that want to join and come down and hear Toshiki talk about his sakes and beers.
That's great. This is a nice one, Michael. What is this?
Yeah, this is a brand new product to the Hitachi Nanef line in the States. We've brought it in previously on draft. Today we're enjoying it in the new can package. It is the Yuzu Lager. Do you want to tell us about this beer, Toshiki?
Okay, so Yuzu is Japanese citrus. Maybe everybody know ponzu sauce for cooking. So ponzu sauce is using yuzu, pressed yuzu citrus. Also, this beer is using our original malt called Kaneko Golden, which harvested in our area.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have another Nipponia, but the Nipponia is using a Slush Ace hop. But this beer is using original Japanese hop called Ibuki and yuzu for adding some citrus flavor.
Yeah.
Also lager beer.
It's a lager. And the citrus really comes out.
Yeah, it's got a great yuzu nose, a nice dry like lager finish. You can really feel
lager finish on the palate is bitter on the palate.
Yeah. What's the process for creating new beers for you?
Wow. Good question.
Getting warmed up. Yeah. It's only 10:30.
Some ideas coming. With drinking with team.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Not coming from lab. I'm drinking at restaurant. Make some idea of beer.
Nearby, there's a Japanese cafe I go to. I always get yuzu tea.
Mm. Yeah.
So I know the taste of yuzu.
Yeah, yeah.
But what is yuzu? It's a fruit.
Yuzu is like a lemon. Mm. So yuzu and we say fukuremikan. Fukuremikan is using for our daidai beer. These two citrus is original Japan orange. Other orange eating at Japan is coming from Indo, coming from China. But yuzu and fukuremikan is 100% original at Japan.
And when you make this beer, are you using fresh fruit or using dried fruit?
For yuzu, it's only harvest in autumn season. We harvest lots of yuzu and frozen, keep frozen.
Yeah.
And using for the beer.
No, that's great. It's different than the other ones. And I mean, fruit in beer is a trend, isn't it? It seems popular in America now. What do you guys think of that trend?
Well, it certainly is a trend. There's no question about it. I think there are a lot of different types of sort of fruited beers. Of course, you have the sort of beers that are sort of paying homage to like Belgian lambic, then you also have these beers that are slightly more mass market that use fruit quite aggressively, and I find lack a lot of balance. But I think yuzu lager is a great example of really incorporating fruit well into a beer because it is very, very balanced. You get all of those really nice yuzu aromatics on the nose, and on the palate you similarly get that yuzu flavor up front, but it is quite balanced, dry, with a touch of bitterness in the back end. So this is a great example of fruit being really, really well integrated into a beer.
Toshi, when you come to New York also, do you taste a lot of New York City beers? Are you interested in the New York City breweries?
Yes, I tasted maybe 6 beers last night at the bar. And yes, nice beers I tasted. Also New England IPA, I tasted.
There are a couple of those around these days.
Yeah. I asked, what is New England IPA?
Yeah.
I'm so curious in Japan. Sometimes so the brewery in California, they have New England style IPA to Japan. A little bit curious for me.
Well, maybe next year you'll make it. New England style IPA
some
in Japan.
Some Japanese beer already started brewing New England IPA.
Interesting.
You know, there's some other Japanese brewers that I've met before. There's Baird.
Yes.
He was American, but he was brewing it in Japan.
Yes. Mm.
Do you know him?
Yeah, of course I know him. We are good friend. Mm.
And is he? How's he doing? I haven't been there.
He's quite creative guy. He's American, but his idea is so creative, using some Japanese ingredient. Also, he's straight for brewing. I'm straight for business.
Yeah, man. This is fun. I don't know if we took a short break, Justin. I don't know how much more time we have, but we're going to keep talking. So this is the Yuzu Lager.
About 15 minutes.
I like lager styles. Mm. You know, I feel like they're coming back. I'm drinking them a lot more than I used to. I think a lot of craft breweries are making them. Who wants to talk about lager beers as a style?
I love lager beers. I mean, I think when I first came to beer, what was it, in the early aughts, the things that attracted me more were these wild, extreme, very American beers that had, like, you know, packed with flavor and bitterness, like really, you know, they rock the palate, so to speak. But over time, I've really come to appreciate like simplicity in beer, which is actually a very difficult thing for a brewer to achieve. With, you know, you can't really hide behind defects, or rather, you can't hide behind ingredients in order to mask defects. In a lager, it's really, it's like naked, it's all there, and when it's done right, it's so simple, refreshing, and satisfying.
Well, all the beers have been refreshing. You know, going back to salesmanship, you know, you showed up with beers, they're perfect temperature. You know, I don't know where you brought them on the subway or up in a hotel. How'd you get them to be perfect temperature?
It's a
trade secret. Technology. Advanced technology.
It's trade secret.
We can't tell you.
And you learned a lot, George, haven't you? So how long have you been working with the team now?
I've been with Beer United for over 3 years now. Yeah. It's been amazing every day. I learned a lot from this guy over here, Michael Obolensky.
For better or for worse.
you guys are my legends. I don't think I even realize how long Mateus has been in business. You know, you had those classic brands from the beginning, like Schneider and Reisdorf Kolsch.
Sure.
But, you know, you've really got some great products. Are there any other brands that stand out? I know that might be friends with Mr. Kayuchi from other countries that you work with.
Oh, Del Ducato, I think, is a great example.
Perfect example.
Of an international collaboration, which yielded something really incredible. You should talk about that.
Do you want to tell us about the Koji Arizo Toshiyuki and your collaboration with Giovanni?
Yeah, Giovanni is my good friend. I learned a lot of Italian culture of brewing from him. And also we send our Koji to Ducato, and he's brewing Riso?
Koji Riso.
But his idea is different than us. So he's using Koji on the fermentation process, I guess,
In the fermentation and
both.
In the mash.
Our Saison Japo is only using mashing, but he's using only both fermentation and mashing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the beer, it does evolve quite a bit in the bottle as well, as we've noticed, but I think for the better, for sure. It's very interesting to see how it develops, because the Koji is still active, and it's a really, really fascinating beer.
Well, that's a special role that you guys have as Beer United, that you do bring together some of your international brewers. I know they've been at your offices in Connecticut. Is there anything coming up this year with... some of your international brewers, any little gatherings or?
I mean, I wish I could say yes, but no. I'm afraid not. I mean, like, hopefully we'll get a lot more suppliers into the market this year. We're bringing up a lot more customers to our warehouse facility, which is in Oxford, Connecticut. The OEC Brewing is also on site where the Beer United warehouse is. We have like greenhouses and various different aging and fermentation like rooms and facilities, so to speak. So we do a lot of playing around up there. We had a festival for the trade called Nepenthea, which was last done three or four years ago?
Yeah, I think it was 3 years ago.
So we might do one next year, I guess, hopefully. Right now we're really just bringing people up periodically to show them the warehouse, but it's mostly for trade people. Though I encourage anyone to come up to Oxford, Connecticut on the weekends. The OEC Brewery is open. You can taste some of their beers. They have a few United beers in the fridge and see our facilities like that.
That's great. Is there one more beer or did you drink them all?
We could do the beer. We also have a bottle of sake.
Let's do the sake,
well.
Yeah.
You this also is a new sake product we just brought in a few months ago.
Do we need water?
Toshi's going to rinse off the glasses. I've always respected Toshi as a brewer and a businessman, and it's always my honor to see him. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, he's really... Hitachi now is one of the mainstays of the B-United catalog, for sure, along with Schneider and Reinsdorf. We're really happy to have Toshi Yuki and work with him.
So I know you guys are in a lot of different markets, like you're in Minnesota, Texas. Is Hitachino in all your core markets?
Absolutely, yeah. They do really well in like Hawaii. We sell a lot of Hitachino, and I believe in Alaska as well. It's a pretty popular brand. We're in, I think, 46 states. That might be like, it might be 47, it might be 45, but Hitachino is for sure in all of our markets and a big player in each one.
Toshi, do you drink more sake or beer?
It's a good question. I like wine. It's a joke.
You, Justin, Garrett Oliver.
So
all the brewers like to drink wine.
Yeah, normally, so we drink both beer and sake. Also wine. I like wine. Also, I like whiskey also. So, but sake is completely different than beer for tasting. This is why I rinse glass by water. So beer bitterness will damage sake freshness.
Okay.
Mm. So in Japan, everybody say, Toriaezu beer is very famous in Japanese restaurant. Toriaezu meaning no idea what drinking, but I drink beer. It's Japanese culture. First order beer in Japanese culture. But if drink beer at first, the bitterness on the palate will damage sake tasting. So my tasting first starts sake. And after a few sake tasting, go to beer.
We did things backwards this morning.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, so this is a new product from Kyuchi Brewery, new sake. So it's first time to using old logo on the sake label. Because this is challenging for beer market. We bring sake, which will match for the American customers tasting.
Well, it's confusing to think of Hitachino and Kyuchi. They sound like different brands.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this is actually the Hitachino Owl label on the sake.
Yes.
And it's a small bottle too, so you could order this by yourself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So this is sparkling, also a little bit sour by using special koji and low alcohol, maybe 12%?
12%.
Sake is normally 15%. So this is low alcohol, spice, sparkling, and sour. It's all keyword is like beer.
Yeah.
Mm. Sparkling, bubbling, and sour, it's keyword.
Yeah, that is a very subtle acidity which balances with this light effervescence.
But this, nice the serving size matters with sake. I mean, over the years, we've sold a lot of sake. If you have a large bottle format, people don't always want to buy a whole bottle. But if it's a single serving, you know, there has also been sakes in cans as well. Is the sake industry just realizing that the American market likes this size?
Yeah, so now in Japan, the popular ones we call Isshobi, it's 1.8 liter sake. It's huge big. Now, it's like a magnum bottle of wine.
Yeah,
it's changed to the 720 milliliter sake. It's like a wine bottle, but it's too much. 15% alcohol. Also, sake quality was easy for damaging by the Wild East. So now market changed to a small bottle like this.
Yeah.
And Toshi, I heard that there was some very fascinating history about the size of sake bottles and that it had to do with like rice servings. So like 180 milliliters was the equivalent to like one serving of rice or something.
Yeah, each
and then 720 was...
So it's same as American, maybe the gallon, pardon? Ounce?
Ounces, yeah. Yeah, ounces.
Yeah, so in Japan, we are using a go. Go is 180 milliliter, is one unit. We say go. This is just nimo, two units.
Two units, okay.
So the big bottle is 10 units.
Okay.
And then I want to ask you about, this always happens in Japanese restaurants, pairing your drink and your food. So if I'm having sushi rolls, like the American style, rice on the outside, simple filling, is it better with beer or sake?
Of course, sake should be better. Because the sushi, no bitter taste on the sushi. So beer is not good for sushi.
But with the rice and rice, too, the rice on the sushi roll, that's better with sake too?
Yes.
Yeah.
Same origin.
And just sashimi, just fish, maybe better with sake.
What cuisine would you pair sake with that's not Japanese cuisine?
Oh, good question.
So, when I was home, I taste sake. Blue cheese is good for sake.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah. Interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
The koji, right? It's like...
Oh, fermented. Also, both fermented.
Yeah. So could you have like a cheeseburger with sake? Is that a good pairing?
Cheeseburger?
Yeah. Would that work?
Yeah, so we have one restaurant serving a hamburger.
Yeah.
I will try next week.
Report back. Let me know.
And then what about the beef, Wagyu beef? Is that better with beer or with sake?
Yeah. So Wagyu beef is so oily, so beer is good for Wagyu beef. Also, like this sparkling sake, low alcohol sake, is okay for Wagyu beef.
Yeah. And then, izakaya food, like a salted soy fish, dried fish, is that better with beer or sake?
Both.
Yeah?
Okay.
Yeah, katsu is great with beer, I would say. Now these fried Japanese food.
Yeah. This is why Japanese people drinking beer so much. Now the production volume sake was done every year. So 25 years before was the peak of production of sake. Now just 70% down.
What about the export market? Is that going up?
It's going up. So when I returned my family business 30 years before, 2,500 sake breweries working, but now almost 1,000 breweries
brewing
sake. Wow. So big financial trouble is coming to sake brewery.
Is this because the younger generations in Japan just aren't drinking sake? I mean, they're solely drinking beer?
Good question. So this, my personal idea is sake was controlled by tax office. Tax office have an award every year. So every brewery is thinking to brew sake to one idea, Daiginjo.
Okay.
But the beer, in the competition, there are so many categories, like a pale ale, like a Baisen. But sake, all of sake brewery from Japan is brewing one sake for competition.
Which is the most expensive and prestigious.
Yeah. That's meaning, so every sake taste is almost similar in Japan. But 30 years before when I start business, sake business, so the sake quality was different by each area. Akita is the north part of Japan. Their sake is so sweet.
Interesting.
Niigata, they are so dry. So completely different. It's maybe coming from the culture of food culture in each area. But now, every sake brewer is brewing same sake.
Right.
So not interesting for everybody.
But I know that at the Kyuchi Brewery, you seem to innovate a lot with your sake.
Yeah.
Because, of course, there's the Asamura sake, which uses all red rice.
Yeah.
I know the Taro sake is quite traditional, but the Zen Koji that you do with 100% Koji mold, are there other sake breweries that do things like this? Or?
Quite few breweries brewing such unique sake.
Okay.
So, to tell the truth, such special sake is not good for Japanese market.
Right.
Asamura sake is so special. It's only export market.
Okay.
But every foreign people like Asamura sake, it's good for fish. Everybody say.
And then in New York now, there's a new Brooklyn called Brooklyn Kura, which is a sake.
Brewing?
Yes, sake brewing. Kura, Brooklyn Kura.
Kura is brewery.
Yeah, and they have some Japanese experts there. It's an American guy. Maybe next visit, we can go visit it.
Also, San Francisco, there are one sake brewery called Sequoia. They are brewing quite good sake in San Francisco.
Interesting.
I was so surprised. Also, using American rice, not imported rice.
Okay.
This is a nice segue to my lunch. See where I can get some beer. I'm actually going to do something local. You know, guys, like, why? I'm a big fan of New York City craft butchers. And in the West Village, there's Hudson and Charles, good friends. They go upstate. They get all the animals from different farms, and they cure and they roast all their meats in their butcher shop. They make an excellent roast beef, which I think would go well with this. Also, an Irish ham, which is just a boiled ham, a lot of fat. So you're making me think fat and sake and beer. But it's good. We really appreciate that doing this. You know, we've known Mr. Kayuchi for many years. We've had you sit in with us before with some of your other brewers, but we never got a chance to really talk. You know, last question for me. You're still a young man. You know, your family's, you know, history. You have, to me, you're a giant. You know, you're a giant from sake, a giant in being a pioneer in craft beer. So congratulations. You know, I don't have a question for you, but I bet you must have something else to say. You know, you're depending on a export business. You know, you're selling in China, you're selling in America. Do you think that's the future for you, is more export? Or do you think that in Japan, they'll be more interested in
Both
traditional
market,
products?
Yeah, both markets. So Japan's going to be a market to be maybe developing very recently. Maybe now everybody like IPA, but it's maybe next 10 years more maybe unique beer is coming to Japan's market. Also, we have a huge demand from all over the world. I hope to import our beer, but now our production volume is not so big, so we limit it only the American market, only the European market. But future, we have an Indian market, we have an African market. We can expand our beer culture to all over the world. Also, we have a new business, making a whiskey. So whiskey business is new trend, but we have a lots of barley farm in our area. So we are using such agriculture things to the whiskey, and maybe this is 5 years later, we can launch whiskey to the American market.
So in Japan, is the farmers who are growing barley, do you think it's focused on whiskeys?
Yes, I think so. Now all of Japanese whiskey distillery is using imported barley and malt, but we are focusing only domestic malt only.
And a lot of the Japanese whiskeys have been winning awards. People think some of the Japanese brands are the best,
better than
Scotland. Is there something special about what you're doing in Japan?
So at the whiskey distillery, we are using a Sakura cherry barrel. Cherry blossom is very famous in Japan.
Yeah.
We make a special barrel from cherry tree. And I was so surprised, the color was pink.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like a pink cherry color.
Wow.
So unique idea.
Wow.
Special wood in Japan. Also plum wood we can use.
Wow. The version of your red rice ale in Sakura barrels was incredible.
Same barrel.
That was absolutely incredible.
And then there's a lot of things going on, man. It's so good to see you guys. We worked you guys in, Justin, and you guys worked so hard to put this show together. I just want to thank you so much. Big shout out also to Union Beer Distributors, our sponsors, who distribute you guys in New York, Be United, Michael and George. And thank you very much, Mr. Kayuchi,
for
sitting with us here. Hope to catch you next time. Thanks to our producer, Justin Kennedy, engineer David Tadashore, who'll clean this up. And I'm Jimmy Carboni. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.